Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1 with It's for Women. The car insurance you can sort online anytime.
Well, we move on. Now, the recent by-election in Dublin Bay South saw my next guest elected as a TD for the Labour Party. And while the name Ivana Bacik is known to many of us, to discover a little more about her, I'm joined now by Ivana and the woman who probably knows her best, her mother, Rena. Good morning and welcome to you both.
Good morning.
You look very alike, by the way, but just to say.
Everyone says that.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming into studio. Ivana, first of all, congratulations on your election. Now that the dust has settled a little, I have to ask you both, as the rest of us, like we were learning of your electoral success, I gather you were both blissfully unaware of it. Remind us what you were doing.
Well, it's very true. And it is perhaps hard to think of it now, but you know, we had been very clearly instructed by my wonderful campaign manager Dermot Ryan from Nina. Dermot had said, you know, please stay away from all social media. We'll have our tally people in at the RDS, but the early tallies, as anyone involved in politics will know, can often give you a very different picture to the later overall picture, because there's different boxes open, different people are ahead and so on. So he said, stay away from all media, go and do something completely different. And of course Rory Quinn famously always went to the cinema on count day. So I thought, I'll do one better than Rory and I'll go for a swim with my mum at the South Wall, wonderful Half Moon Swimming Club in Poolbeg, where we've been swimming all through lockdown. And we went out there and had the most glorious swim, beautiful morning, and actually did get quite, I suppose, carried away blissfully. And people kept walking down the pier and meeting us and saying, shouldn't you be at the count? Or just cryptic things like, well done. And it was only when we came off the pier after the swim that I checked my phone and Dermot Ryan had been ringing five times. The deal was he was the one who was going to ring, and I rang him back and they were practically gibbering with nerves. And he said to me, I thought you'd swum to the Isle of Man. And Mum and I just couldn't believe it. Another friend, Henrietta, was there and she took some photos of Mum and I just literally taking the call, getting the news. We couldn't believe it. Mum kept saying to Dermot, you're joking, she's not topped the poll. And Dermot and Paul Daly and Chloe Manahan, my core team, kept saying, she's topping the poll, you win it. So we couldn't believe it. But it was the best way to be when the count is on. I know some candidates like to be there, but I was so glad to be spared all of that anticipation and the few hours where you don't know. I mean, it's a very personal thing, obviously, to hear how you're doing in a vote. And you never know until the votes are in and so on. But, you know, it was definitely the best thing to do, to be in the sea.
And Rena, you've been with your daughter so many times at different elections. When you were swimming, pretending you were totally distracted, were you just thinking all the time, I wonder how she's doing? I wonder.
Well, actually, I wasn't, because Ivana seemed to be so totally blissfully unaware, and we were enjoying the swim so much. We've been swimming a lot during lockdown. Yeah. So we were just enjoying the swim, really. It was really when we came out of the water and some people were making sort of remarks about, you know, why are you here? that it suddenly began to dawn on me that, golly, hang on a minute, we better get the results here.
I suppose we were trying to put it out of our minds. Yes. We met people from the Half Moon Swimming Club and from the Dublin Port Authority. Yes. We were there, and lots of people are walking up and down the South Wall. I mean, it's a very sociable place. It's a brilliant place to swim. It's such a huge public amenity. And it is easy to get distracted. But every so often I'd have this terrible panicky thought, I really should know what's going on. And I think, no, it's too soon. Remember what Dermot said.
What was your reaction, Rena, first of all, when you heard she had topped the poll?
I was very pleased that she had come in top of the poll, where I think she'd a place she deserves. And so, yes, we were sitting on the, Ivana was sitting on the wall and somebody took a photograph of the two of us, and Ivana's listening to her mobile phone, and suddenly we realised she's been elected. And I thought, yes, that's just right for me.
Yeah. Bring us right back, actually, Rena. Tell me about yourself, first of all. You're a Clare woman. Tell me about your own background.
I was brought up in Kilkee in West Clare, the loveliest place to be brought up. My brother used to stand out on the steps of our house, which was just on the Atlantic, and he used to say to me, the younger sister, he used to say to me, next stop America. And I always thought, you know, we were in such an important position, even though we were in a small town in West Clare, that the next stop was America. But it was a lovely place and we swam an awful lot.
And was there any politics in your family?
No, no, there wasn't, no. I mean, my father was a Fianna Fáil man, but no, there wasn't really. Not sort of active politics, yeah.
And where does the name Bacek come from?
So that is, of course, my dad's family name. And he came over as a small child with his parents and siblings from what was then Czechoslovakia in 1946. My grandpa had been a glass manufacturer in Bohemia before the war. They had a glass factory. He was then in the Czech resistance, spent some of the war years, Second World War years, in a Nazi prison. And when he came out, when the war was ending, saw that with the communists likely to take over in Czechoslovakia, he rightly predicted that it would not be a good time for somebody who had been in the resistance, somebody who was a factory owner. Mm. And he left he came to Ireland, brought his family over with very little, left their house and so on and the factory in Czechoslovakia. But they came over here because they had links here with he had imported glass to Ireland before the war. And he knew of the brand Waterford Glass, which had been in operation some decades previously, but was no longer functioning. And he restarted Waterford Glass after the war in a small, what was really a shed in Ballytruckle in Waterford, and then brought over craftspeople, notably Miroslav Havel, who became chief designer for Waterford Crystal. And so he restarted Waterford Glass. And there's in Waterford Glass now in the showroom, there's a lovely acknowledgement of him there. So growing up, you know, we knew it was a very different name, of course, you know, very few Czech people or people of any other nationality in Ireland at the time when I was small. But we were always very proud of it. And of course, Grandpa, I remember him showing me around the Waterford Glass factory, you know, when I was a child. And it was something we were so proud of, that connection and that huge achievement he had made. I mean, he was later bought out by the McGrath family and there was a lot of developments. But the history of Waterford Glass, as it's now told, acknowledges his role in restarting it after the war.
And where did you live? Where were you born then as a child? Because it was quite a peripatetic. You actually moved around quite a lot, didn't
you? We did.
You?
We moved around. Ivana was born in London. We were living in London at the time. Then we lived in Africa. Then we came back to London very briefly. And then we lived in Cork.
And then we moved to Dublin.
And then we moved to Dublin. Yeah. Yeah.
Cork was hugely formative for you, though, wasn't it?
It was. I did all my... Mum homeschooled me first, so I didn't actually start school until I was six, you know, formally going to school in Cork in a little national school called Clodove National School near Macroom. And we had an amazing head... we called him the master, the head teacher, called Padraig Kearse, who took a real interest in me particularly and, you know... from that school and with Mum's homeschooling as well, I won a scholarship to Alexandra. So I came up to Dublin at 11 then. But my gran was here, Mum's mum. So we had a lot of Dublin connections. And then we moved up to Dublin and to Rathgar and Terenure after that. But yeah, Cork was very formative and it was a huge culture change coming from a small country national school with, I think must have been only about 80 pupils in the whole school, and coming up to Alex, which is such a big school and such a Dublin school, you know. So I boarded there for a couple of years.
Why did you end up homeschooling Ivana, and what was that like? Was she a good pupil to homeschool?
It was absolutely great.
I hope you're going to say yes.
It was absolutely great. Well, it had started in South Africa when we lived in South Africa because we lived nowhere near a school, miles and miles from a school. So I started to, and I knew when we got back to London, because we had a house in London, I thought we'd settle in London, that she would be at a huge disadvantage academically. So I went into the local library, well, it wasn't local, the nearest city library, and the only books they had on education were by Maria Montessori, and they were sort of first editions. So I soaked myself in that, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I then realised this is how I'd like to be taught, that you offer the child material, and if they take an interest, you give them more, and so on. So I offered Ivana things and she gobbled it up.
Because you were reading really young, the way you approached it.
Four and a half.
Yeah, I remember, like, my earliest memories are reading, and it was just such a fantastic thing to be able to read, you know.
So. The problem was getting books then for you because we were out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah.
But it meant then when I started school, I was, you know, that I was able to keep up and so on. And Mum actually set up a play school, a Montessori school in Cork then for other kids in the area when we moved there, and that was really innovative, I think. Fantastic thing to do.
You also got a lot of your feminism and your feminist attitudes and politics from your mother, didn't you? Because you, Rena, were involved, for instance, in Cork, in issues affecting women.
Yes, I was. Yeah, I was.
Tell me about that.
And I suppose I'd have got that from my mother, who was, unlike a lot of women of her age, you know, she was quite, without actually having the sort of words for it, she was quite a feminist.
In what way?
In what way? She totally rejected, you know, the sort of typical Catholic way of women being subject to husbands, which would have been like that in the 40s and 50s, the 1940s and 50s. So I'm not sure where she got it from, because her sisters weren't like that, really.
Yeah, she was grand. I was very close to my gran, and I spent a lot of time with her when I was up in Dublin at boarding school before we all moved back to Dublin. And she was an incredibly formative influence on me, as is mum. And I think mum is much more, you know, mum is a very strong feminist, and you know, were able to articulate it maybe, but gran was a feminist instinctively. Yeah. While being a very strong Catholic, she was also just very clear about girls should be given every opportunity, the same as boys. She was very passionate about education, wasn't she?
Yeah,
and she really was.
Yeah.
She was most unusual for her time.
Just ahead of her time, really.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
And do you think also you got a lot of your feminism from watching your mother giving out pamphlets and other things?
I remember mum in Cork in the Colkey giving out condoms with some of the others. But it was also in our house, you know, that my brothers and my sister and I were all treated very equally. There was strong emphasis on all of our education, and also in the house. I mean, my brothers remain wonderful cooks to this day, better than I am probably. And, you know, so we were all very much, it was a household of equals. So that was really important. And then, mum, you also had the books lying around that I started reading then, James Connolly and Marilyn French, The Women's Room, which was, I found, a very powerful book, and Simone de Beauvoir. So it was reading those books as well, I think, even before I went to college. And then, of course, Trinity was, you know, just wildly exciting as a campus in the 80s, where we had Mary Robinson and Mary McAleese. We had Kader Asmal. We had these amazing lecturers, and such a kind of a hotbed of politics and political engagement. It was brilliant.
Because I want to ask you about that now. By the way, listeners, can you stop texting the competition line, because it's now closed and we're drowning in them. But just to say, now, you became president of the Students' Union in Trinity, but you weren't long the role of Anna when you were threatened with legal action and imprisonment. Remind people what happened.
Well, it was a very intense time. I was elected in my final year as president of Trinity Students' Union. I'd been involved in the union and in the Labour Society there for a couple of years all through my college time. But we knew when we were elected that we were going to be pursued by SPUC, the Society for the Protection of the Unborn Child, SPUC. None of my students or my kids can believe that they were such a powerful force at the time, and they really were. This was 1989. They came after us because by then women's clinics had been closed down, and under the Eighth Amendment, people were being forbidden to give even a phone number of a clinic in England to women in crisis pregnancy. So my most striking memory from the summer of 89, sitting in the union office taking desperate phone calls every day from women and girls all around Ireland who had a crisis pregnancy, who needed to terminate it, you know, and who had nowhere to go. And the only place openly providing a phone number of clinics in England was our Students' Union in Trinity. And so we were really on the front line. SPUC were pursuing us, but we knew we couldn't let these women and girls down. And so we made a decision we would, you know, stand up to SPUC, and that we would just go into court and defy them. And they took out court proceedings threatening us with prison for defying. They'd got a court order trying to stop us from giving this information, but we were still getting these calls, and women were even calling in person. I mean, it was, you know, I was 21. It was a really intense and formative time.
So were you worried?
Mary Robinson, I should say, through her brilliant legal argument, kept us out of prison.
Okay. So, yeah. She saved you. Worried about Ivana?
I was frantically worried, yes. I was working and I had a lunch break of an hour and I drove to the four courts. And as I came down past on the Liffey, a lot of her
students were all outside
with placards, but we weren't sure was she going to Mountjoy or even thinking about it or not. Yeah. So I thought I'd be getting a chance to say goodbye to her.
Mary Robinson had told us to pack our toothbrushes. She thought we were going to prison, but at the last minute, as the day proceeded in court, the judge accepted the argument, and the case was referred to the European Court.
Was that really, Ivana, do you think, the start of your involvement in political issues? I mean, I mean, was it that experience really that whetted your appetite for political life or not?
Yes, I think so. I mean, it was a very, student politics can be very bruising and very intense, but certainly that experience stayed with me. And I suppose, you know, the desire to see change for women's rights in particular, to see, you know, laws passed that would be pro-choice, that would enable women to have access to reproductive health care and to abortion, legal abortion. These were the things that kind of, I suppose, kept me really involved in politics for a long time, long before I went for election to the Shannon, or, you know, that was the driving force, and I was very active on the ground in that way.
And it's interesting because a lot of people writing about your success this time was saying, you know, a lot of the issues you've pursued in the past, many people in our society, they weren't comfortable with them, but almost people in Ireland have become full circle. Have you noticed that, Rena? Because obviously you've been out campaigning with her at different stages.
Yes.
But there was probably a time when the issues your daughter was pursuing, they weren't that popular.
They weren't that popular, yeah. But I could remember before that, you know, the problems about getting contraceptives. And I mean, that was a huge first battle, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. So you saw how things had changed.
Yeah.
As the views on contraception changed. But it is relatively recent. I mean, when we think back, marriage equality, which we obviously passed resoundingly in 2015, but as recently as 2011, that was seen as a really radical position to hold in favour of the right of same-sex couples to marry. And now we think, oh, well, of course, people always held that view, and they didn't. And the same with abortion. I mean, 2018 referendum was amazing to be part of, and to see a younger generation coming up as well, and to be so passionate about it, and to see people just, you know, taking that view. But for a long time, it had been such an unpopular and difficult position to hold.
In the same way as birth control had been.
I was interested when I was coming in this morning thinking, the moment you heard Owen Murphy was actually leaving political life, did you say, I'm running, I'm going for this?
Well, it took me completely by surprise. But we had a press conference that morning about autism, about a national autism empowerment strategy, myself and Eoin O'Riordan. And Eoin turned to me and said, about half an hour before, he said, we're going to be out on the plinth, they're going to ask you. And I said, I suppose I better have an answer. So I rang my now husband, Alan, my partner, and said to him, I think I'm going to say I'll run. Because in fact, we were already putting in place the process for me to be selected as the candidate for the general election for Labour. So I knew I would be the candidate. I have a fantastic United constituency party team behind me, so I knew that was fine. But I thought, God, yes, I suppose I will be asked. And I was asked, and I said, yes, I would love the opportunity to represent my home constituency. I'd never had the chance to run in my own home area before, and I must say the campaign was just really amazing. You know, had such support, not just from within Labour, but from so many non-Labour people, activists and friends, people who had campaigned with on repeal and marriage equality and other local and national issues, as well as family. My mum was a great canvasser.
Yeah, I can imagine you canvassing. Do you think largely, though, I mean, it was a personal vote for Evanna? A lot of people wrote that afterwards. Like, what did you find in the doorsteps when you said, I am Evanna's... Did you say, I am Evanna's mother?
Sometimes I did. And that had
line.
A terrific response.
Yeah,
it had a terrific response. And the most extraordinary sort of people, you'd think, you know, much older than me even, you know, would come to the door and they'd realise who we were campaigning for and ask to see her. So we had to run back up the street and get Evanna. And somebody, you know, who you would have thought maybe wouldn't have sort of espoused Evanna's ideas, absolutely longing to see her.
Are they much more polite, though, I'm just thinking? Like, if someone comes in the door and you say, you're the candidate's mother, like, are people by and large very nice?
Yes, although if they have strongly held views, they would argue the toss, really, which is a terrific democracy, really.
It is.
At work.
You get the best discussions on the doorsteps.
Yes.
You know, my mum's partner, who sadly died in 2019, Gerry Quinlan, he was very Fianna Fáil, and, you know, but he was great about the art of canvassing, and really was so inspiring to me, you know, telling me, advising me, I suppose, about, you know, about some of the ways to engage with people on doors. But, you know, once you do it, I love canvassing. And once you do get involved in discussions with people, and people will tell you all sorts of personal stories, won't they, Mum? Like, on your door, and, you know, and you can have these very short, really intense periods of almost intimacy or really closeness with somebody on a door. So it is a really powerful democratic process.
Yes.
The process of canvassing an election.
Yes.
The interesting thing, though, is you kept going, Evanna, because obviously you were disappointed when you didn't get a Dáil seat before. Did you sense this time you could do it?
Well, I mean, 10 years ago, I'd said my kids were very small and I'd said, look, I'm not going to run again unless it's in my own area. And I was lucky enough, you know, to be re-elected four times for Trinity, for the Shannon seat, and was able to use that effectively. But this time round, the campaign, it did feel different, I suppose, in retrospect. Mm. We were getting huge warmth on the doors, a lot of very positive people.
Yes.
You know, people saying, yes, I've already decided and so on. But at the same time, you never want to believe it. And people are generally polite and courteous. So some of me thought, it's just politeness, you know, we won't make it. And I suppose I'm a veteran of so many referendum campaigns too. I knew not to trust anything because things can change in the last few days as well, or something can happen, somebody can say something and it just can all go differently. So I never, until that moment at the end of the South Wall when Mum and I took the phone call, you know, we just couldn't be sure.
And it is another woman in the Dáil. Every single woman matters right now in that Dáil.
Absolutely. The first thing that struck me, because I was straight in, I mean, Alan Kelly said to me, you're going in every day to speak now. The Dáil is just sitting for one more week. So I went in every day and observed it. And it's very male atmosphere. The Shannon is 40% women, but the Dáil is still only just 23%. Mm. I was only the 37th woman to this Dáil. And then I discovered only the 131st woman ever elected in over 100 years to the Dáil. So it just shows you how few women still are engaged in that level in politics and how much we need to change things just to change the culture, and I hope make the Dáil a somewhat less adversarial and more collaborative in the process. I think that makes it a more, would make it a more effective, more representative parliament too, you know. And, you know, it's wildly exciting to be in there. I mean, I'm so thrilled. But I do feel like there really is a scarcity of women in there. And we do, you know, there's a nice solidarity among the women, actually, and some lovely, you know, lovely words about me in the Dáil from other women too.
Your leader, of course, Alan Kelly, said you're up there with Michael Dee and Mary Robinson as an icon of the party. You're also Reid Professor of Law in Trinity, a position previously held by two of our former presidents, Mary McAleese and Mary Robinson. Might the Oars interest you in the future?
Well, I'm only a week or so, two weeks in the Dáil. So I think I'll be focusing on representing Dublin Bay South. And what I always say, because that has been said before, is my name isn't Mary. And Mary Robinson and Mary McAleese are wonderful. Michael Dee is a fantastic president. And I was really proud to canvass for him and campaign for him. So I think for the moment, I'm focusing on the Dáil.
And Rena, when you look at your daughter now and you remember her as a little girl, I think it's always interesting to watch her children as they grow. Did you always know, perhaps within her, she had the steel to keep going, to get into whatever area of life she wanted to work in and succeed?
Well, I suppose I had huge, faith in all four of mine, but the thing about Ivana being the eldest, you see, is you've nothing to compare it with. and the other thing is, of course, being brought up in Africa, there was no other, you know, she wasn't at school, for instance, so it was very hard to gauge it. So I just took this as the ordinary run of the mill.
Yeah. Well, just to say as we close, lots of lovely reaction from our listeners. One says, so lovely listening to Ivana and her wonderful mum. Brilliant that we have another fantastic woman in the Dáil. Another, Jane, says, I have great memories of Ivana and the History Society in Trinity. Oh. And finally, congratulations to Ivana. I took her around the glassworks with her mum and family last year.
Oh.
I worked there when her granddad was involved and who lived in the neighbouring parish of Piltown, South Kenny, Sean Marr.
Oh, thank you so much, Sean. It was a wonderful tour. We still think of it so much. My daughter Louie was able to blow a glass vase and it's still with us. So that was a wonderful tour and really lovely to be there with the family.
Well, Ivana Bacic, congratulations on your seat. And Rena, thank you so much for coming in this morning. We'll take a break.
Thank you.